Mini episode 589 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 589. You've got with you today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Steve Callis. We are here today to break down the annual list, the FDH MLB Top 30. This is a list that we have done every year the last couple of years during the summer, breaking down the best players in baseball as we see it at the moment. Steve is here to analyze the list today, where he agrees and where he disagrees with the list. Of course, again, we do this for all four of the major sports in North America, and it's the NFL 32 list. Why? Because in every other major sport, it's 30 teams. There are 32 franchises in the NFL. We did that one, of course, recently with Ken Vex of FirstDownScouting.com, one of our other FDH Lounge dignitaries, and that one is probably the hardest one to do because of the number of positions, the number of elements in football that are sort of like comparing apples to oranges as far as value, but baseball does not lag behind very far, let me tell you, particularly when you're doing it in season. This is the only moving target that we have. It's the only one of the sports that we're doing as it goes along. So I've been revising this through the course of the summer. Ultimately, the final composition of the list is up to me. I first started looking at this back in May. When I locked in the date to record this with Steve, that was when I finally locked down what the list was going to be and posted it. You can find the list the same place that you find the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. Here to analyze the list today with me, my good friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Steve Callis, who, of course, you can hear regularly on such fine outlets as WFAN in New York, SNY in New York, and other outlets as well, including the STN.net. Good to have you on with us again today, Steve. How you doing, my friend?
Good to be with you. Can't wait to do this. This will be a lot of fun.
Always enjoy breaking this down with you, getting your analysis, your sense of where you agree and where you disagree. This list, I would say, broadly speaking, going into it, I'm going to lump this in with doing the NBA list this year because it seems to me that with the onrush of great young talent, probably even more so in MLB than in the NBA, of where it just made it harder to make the list. It felt like performers who were sort of at the tail end of the list in years past, 27, 28, 29, 30, if you look at what they were doing at the time versus what the guys are doing in the spots right now, it seems like they're performing at a higher level. Do you see any kind of overall rough parallel between MLB and the NBA right now as far as the number of great young players elevating their games?
Well, I see a general parallel, but as you know, it's been, I don't know if easy is the right word, but certainly in the NBA, more prevalent going back, 20 years now, where guys could come right out of college, or you'll recall even before, right out of high school, now one and done out of college. Whereas traditionally in baseball, and I think there's a parallel, but it's still not quite the same. Traditionally in baseball, in my opinion, by far the toughest game to be great at, the old, hitting a round ball with a bat, et cetera. But also the pitchers now, I think these guys who are coming along at a younger age are just more well-groomed. Going back to travel baseball when you're 15, 16, 17, these kids are playing 60, 70, 80 games a summer, right through to playing in college, which now preps you better, I think, than it did decades ago for the major league. So you do have an incredible array of young talent in baseball, I'll say the last 3 to 5 years, that you did not have 10, 20, 30, and 40 years ago. In the old days, and by that I mean the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, you rarely saw a guy who hadn't played minor league ball for, 2, 3, 4 years. in the major leagues. Nowadays, it's more like the colleges kind of prepare you a little better, and maybe you'll get a year of minor league ball, 2 years, and not only that, you can show up and not just be a major leaguer, but as we're seeing now, you can be a star. Whereas in the NBA, you've had guys for a few decades now jump right out of college, even high school. LeBron James, obviously, the best example. So, yeah, there's a parallel, but I still think it's a little easier in my maybe biased for baseball opinion to go from into the NBA and be a top player right away as opposed to Major League Baseball.
That's true, and I think that the cut is definitely a little bit harder in baseball when you look at it. And I was looking at the NBA list and saying, well, gee, none of the Atlanta Hawks ended up making the top 30, and that list was, of course, started to be put together before the playoffs happened, and then you kind of saw in the playoffs that Atlanta really was a team where the whole was a lot greater than the sum of the parts. So when you look at the fact that I had used the Hawks at the time, none of them making the top 30 as evidence of how tough it was. Yeah, to go over this baseball list, I think that was evidence of how tough it was. When you look at some of the guys that missed the list, and it wouldn't surprise me if you had a few names to put in front of me as far as guys who are not on this list. Let's first take a look at the guys who dropped off the list from last year. There was a healthy crop of players that fell off the list. There's pretty good turnover generally. There's 15 guys who are returning to the list this year. So 15, of course, who dropped off from last year. There were 14 players who returned to the list from 2013 last year. But in 2013, 20 players returned. So there was, in the first 2 years of the list, a little bit more continuity than what we're seeing now. Of the guys that missed the list, what's remarkable to me, Steve, is how little you could make a case for almost any of them right now. It's just an incredible kind of changing of the guard moment in baseball. Counting our way up, the guys who dropped off the list from last year, Greg Holland, number 29, still a very good closer, just not superhuman like last year. Robinson Cano, number 28, showing a little bit of a disturbing fall off this year. Don't know if that's the beginning of the end for him as far as a franchise player goes or just a bump in the road. Number 27, Adam Jones. Even when he makes the list, he's, again, kind of a fringe guy to make it. Just couldn't make it with the tougher crop that we had this year. Number 26, Carlos Gomez. Hasn't really been healthy all year, but he's getting into the early 30s, and you don't know if the drop-off's coming. Number 25, Ryan Braun. It does look like the drop-off has come a little bit for him, maybe more so in the sense that a lot of other hitters in baseball have caught up to him and he doesn't stand out the way that he used to. Number 23, John Lester, nothing really wrong with him, but you've got to be really elite to make the list this year, as we'll see. Number 22, Cole Hamels, a little bit of the same thing with him. 21, Adrian Beltre, getting older and maybe finally starting to get a little bit banged up based on the performance he's had this year. Number 18, David Price. A guy who wasn't far off of the list, a guy that you could make a better case for being on the list than probably just about anybody else who missed it. Number 17, Sean Doolittle, really hasn't shown this year what he was capable of, as was the case last year, and there's a number of circumstances for that, of course. Number 16, Yasiel Puig. There's a guy who you're either kind of loving him or hating him at the moment based on what he's doing. Number 15, Yu Darvish. That's a health issue, as with number 12, Adam Wainwright. Same thing with those guys. Number 13, Troy Tulowitzki, since the trade to Toronto, looking a little bit more like that classic Tulowitzki, but again, not enough of it this year probably to justify being on here. Number 10, Koji Uehara. That was even before his injury that he wasn't making the list this year. Basically being a great closer or a great relief pitcher, as the case may be, because there's going to be some setup guys on the list. There's not as much differentiation right now because there's a lot of great closers and setup guys in the game. So but when you look at that, Steve, do you agree with me that there's almost no controversy in most of these cases with the guys who dropped off the list?
Almost no. I have a couple of comments about a couple of guys. The first one I'll bring up is Robinson Cano. Watching him in New York for those 9 years, I thought he was destined to be one of the greatest second basemen of all time. It was no secret once he left, you know, the friendly confines of the right field porch at Yankee Stadium that his power numbers would go down. But I thought you correctly had him ranked last year as a second-tier player. His power numbers, of course, did go down. I think he was 1482. hit 314, still a great fielding second baseman. But I did want to say about this year, because I saw an interview with Cano. Obviously, he fell off a cliff early this year, but I saw an interview with him around the All-Star break where he said, look, I've been hitting the ball hard. I'm going to have a really good second half, and I'm not going to make a case for him to be on the second-tier level this year, but I am going to say in the last month, and I went and checked out these dates, in the last month, 30 games or so, he's hit 356. He's actually raised his average from 249 to 274. As you know, Rick, very hard to raise your average 25 points in July and August. That's amazing. So right. He doesn't make enough of a case for me to say to you he should be on the second tier. He's also got 13 homers, which is just one less than he had all of last year. But there's no doubt he was in an incredible funk. I don't think it's the beginning of the end. Frankly, the first 3 or 4 months of the year, or April, May, June, I'll say I did. But now I've watched him more since I heard that interview, and he's certainly crushing the ball. And even though he's hit 356 in the last month, I could tell you he could have even hit better than that, such is the luck of baseball. The one complaint, and you kind of referenced it, the one complaint I would have, I think David Price still has to be in the second tier. The recent trade to Toronto, it's almost like a wake-up call for this guy. He's had 3 brilliant starts for the Blue Jays. He's going to get a heck of a lot more run support pitching for Toronto. If I was a pitcher, I'd go sign with Toronto yesterday. But his numbers now are as good or better than they were last year. And I know the interesting thing that people should know is this is not just your rankings aren't solely on this year, but it also counts last year or maybe even the year before. Obviously a little lesser, but it's kind of a cumulative thing. So Price this year is now 11-4 with a 2.41 ERA. His whip is 1.09, 3 gems for Toronto in the midst of a pennant race. So I do think he does deserve, and you referenced it in your comments, the only guy I agree with you on this list who I think I could make a strong case for being in the second tier.
And that's what's remarkable. Out of 15 guys from last year, there's 14 of them where we can kind of rule them out without even really thinking too hard about it. And it doesn't mean that we were wrong at the time last year. It just shows you that's how much things have changed. And again, as you referenced, it's good that you point that out. This is if a 162-game season was starting today. We always reference it and can't take into account, again, like, oh, well, a lot of innings pitched from March to August. No, that's not how we're looking at it. We're not saying that somebody is going to have 400 innings pitched because they're going to take what they did previously plus now. But just if you were starting a team, and this is not just fantasy, although statistics will play into this somewhat, but as you said, sort of the cumulative part of this as well. What has somebody's track record shown? What have they shown this year? It's a lot of different factors. If we were starting a team, this is the order in which I would draft these guys to go on to the team. And let's start this by taking a look here. We'll go the second tier goes from 19 to 30. Let's go back to 25 and then stop there at that point. Number 30, this is a characteristic that I do have of being gutless sometimes. I'm calling a tie if I have 2 names at the end of a list and I cannot choose between them. I can't justify it, but it's just the way that I operate sometimes. A tie for number 30 on the list, Jose Abreu, who was number 9 last year, and Craig Kimbrell, who was number 8 last year. That is the steepest fall for anybody on the list from last year to this year while remaining on the list. Again, more so probably about the fungible nature of the closers and also the setup guys, because we're going to have some setup guys coming shortly thereafter as we go up the list. But Kimbrell, again, earlier this season, some rough outings. He's been much better of late. Number 29, Wade Davis. He was not on the list last year. Number 28, Dellin Betances, who, again, was not on the list last year. To mix those guys in together, it's hard to put either of them too high, still being setup guys, but they have both arguably outperformed the closers on their ball clubs this year. In the case of Betances, not because Andrew Miller's done anything wrong, but just because Betances has pitched an entire season and Miller missed a little bit of time with injury. Number 27, J.D. Martinez. He was not on the list last year. Number 26, Jose Altuve. He was number 30 last year, so a small jump for him. And number 25, Matt Harvey. He was not on the list last year, back on the list from 2 years ago. Of course, the reason for that donut hole is the injury that he had in terms of getting his Tommy John operation done and bouncing back for the Mets and showing this year that he has a good semblance of what he had previously. So Thoughts on 30 to 25, Steve?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts on 30 to 25. You talked about, and obviously I'm New York-based, Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller, when healthy, to me have been the lockdown. The reason the Yankees are fighting for their division is because of those two guys. I will say, and I agree with the analysis, Dellin Betances should be on the list because he's been there all year and is virtually unhittable. But I will point out that Andrew Miller was 24 for 24 in save opportunities until blowing one about a week ago or so. So he could, you know, that would be a picayune New York bias thing. But Wade Davis has been unbelievable. You can't really argue with these other guys. Altuve, who could have been higher last year, I think he's right where he should be, still hitting over 300 this year. My big complaint on 25 to 30, and I'll give you an amazing stat that I just learned the other day, Rick. I would put Matt Harvey up into the top tier, and for this reason. I understand, obviously, he had the Tommy John last year, so you couldn't count that, but as you know, he started the All-Star game. So if we're going back a year or even two, which is what some of these rankings were based on, I'll just give you his career numbers and tell you this amazing stat I heard the other day. Harvey, for his career now, is 20-12 pitching for a team that is just terrible hitting team. His ERA is 2.38, but here's the stat, and I've never heard of a stat like this, but I think it explains to me how good Harvey is, and that is he has 23 lifetime wins in the major leagues. He has 16 other games, Rick, where he gave up either no runs or one run and did not get a win. And to put that in a little context, because that's kind of hard to believe that you could give up one run or no runs in 16 games, pitch more than five innings, and not get one win in those 16 games. But to give you context, Dwight Gooden, I would say the second best Met pitcher ever after Tom Seaver, he pitched for the Mets for 11 years, and in those 11 years, there were 15 games, only 15 games, where he gave up either zero or one run and did not get a win. So I think when you compare those two, it's hard to believe how good Harvey's been. I was watching the Mets, I don't know, a few days ago or last week. He had pitched against the Pirates, 1-1 into the seventh inning, rain delay. You got to take him out because it's so long, and the Mets lose 8-1. And don't get me wrong, the Mets, you know, we'll talk about this another time, but obviously the Mets are right in the thick of things, having blown by the Nationals, who are playing horribly. But just another example, you can't get this guy many runs. And again, I've never really heard a stat like that. When I heard that, to me, that made the case for Harvey to go from second tier to top tier.
That's a great point. Very, very well taken. And we know a lot of times, and you hear a lot of stories about aces that have bad luck in terms of run support. And to a certain extent, it sort of goes with the territory. Many times they're matched up against fellow number one pitchers. But yeah, that goes well beyond anything that should be expected. That's way beyond whatever any statistical sample should indicate there. Very well done mentioning that. And very, very persuasive as well. The rest of the second tier goes as follows. Number 24 is Buster Posey, who was number 24 a year ago. Just pretty much always kind of does the same things, brings you the same value, and is, I think, pretty much the consensus best catcher in the game right now. Number 23, Corey Kluber. He was number 20 a year ago. This is a guy who's been a little bit tough to kind of slot doing this in season. I remember slotting him number 20 last year and worrying about thoughts that I might come off as an Indians homer because he was in the middle of that big stretch that did eventually get him the Cy Young Award. And then this year, it's been a little bit harder to quantify his value, but much like Matt Harvey, he has been a victim of very bad run support and sometimes even worse defense. Corey Kluber, 23 from 20 last year. Madison Bumgarner, number 22. He missed the list last year. And again, as far as a big game pitcher goes, probably the consensus best big game pitcher in baseball, maybe in the last 20 years, if not further back. It's hard to remember anybody that really carried the consensus label as he has. Number 21, Felix Hernandez. He was number 4 last year. Hasn't really been a big fall off. I'd say it's more so about what the guys in the top tier have done. The same thing will be true when we get to number 19 and break that down a little bit. His numbers not quite what they were a year ago, but he is still King Felix. And still worthy of being on the list Number 20, Giancarlo Stanton, number 7 a year ago. This is a guy that's had some problems with some aches and pains here and there. Still has a little bit of a hole in his swing, but again, maybe the best pure power hitter in baseball, or at least in the top five. There might be some better ones that are ahead of him on this list, but Stanton is still one of the very best. Number 19, Chris Sale. He was number 5 a year ago. It's funny that as we record this, he's coming off another legendary performance, one that he had against the Cubs. And so it becomes a little bit harder to make the case that he's a second-tier guy instead of a first-tier guy, at least if we're going to be prisoners of the moment and go off of that performance. But he's had some great stretches this year. He's been a little bit more human from time to time, but still an outstanding pitcher and somebody that I've got bumping right up against the ceiling of the first tier. So from 19 to 24, what are your thoughts, Steve?
Well, I got to say, if you could give me, and I think you're right, it's really, and I think you've done a good job of not taking the name guys and putting them over the guys we're going to talk about in a few minutes who really aren't the name guys, but are indeed having superior seasons. But if you could have a pitching staff of Sale, King Felix, Bumgarner, Corey Kluber, and Matt Harvey, hard to believe you're going to find a better five than that, but I think you're correct in these things. The only thing I would say, well, I got a few things to say about the pitchers especially. The interesting thing to me on the list, and we'll talk about it in more detail when we get to the top, is Bumgarner obviously being an off the charts after last year's performance in the World Series, off the charts postseason performer. And Kershaw, who we would all, you know, I took a lot of grief in New York when I said Kershaw to me is the one guy I've seen since Koufax who's been Koufax-like, except maybe Pedro Martinez at his best. I'm old enough, for better or worse, to have seen Koufax pitch a number of times when I was a little kid. But Kershaw in the postseason, as you know, has been an absolute disaster. But I think we have to separate the two when we talk about it. So I'll say Kluber is definitely a victim of run support this year. I was looking at his numbers because, as you know, Rick, my son's been in Cleveland for 5 years between college and working there. And I've been to a few games out there. I'm happy to say this, even as a New Yorker, the Hall of Fame in center field at Progressive Field is better than the Yankees Monument Park, which makes me sick on the one hand, but it's so much more impressive and accessible. You can't get into Monument Park during Yankee games. You can go back there, as I did with my son once, and just walk around there for an hour. Unfortunately for Cleveland fans, as you know, a lot of it in the back there is the 40s and Lou Boudreau and guys like that.
Yeah.
It's still a fantastic place to go. But my point is, Kluber last year, and it was a real, you know, most people thought King Felix would get the Cy Young Award. I'm glad they gave it to Kluber. But when you compare the 2 years, 18-9 last year, and now with 12 losses, you know, leading the American League in losses, his ERA is a little higher, but it's still 3.3. But he's got the second worst run support in the American League. And I think that really sums it up. As you know, Rick, he recently also pitched a one-hitter, and he's got a higher run support now. It's around 3 runs a game, but for his first, like, dozen starts, I think it was, like, around 2 runs per game. So when he throws a one-hitter, they beat Minnesota 6-1, and he probably could have taken those extra 4 runs and won 3 or 4 other games this year. So that's the nature of baseball. I think the sabermetrics guys kind of pointed that out, and the baseball family adopted it when King Felix won the Cy Young a few years ago with a 13-12 record. So I think you at least have to look at it. Is Kluber having the year he had last year? No. But it's not really as bad as everybody thinks it is. And that's frankly not a function of Corey Kluber. It is amazing how the run support, when you look a little beneath the surface, is so important. But I think Kluber is right where he should be. King Felix, I thought, has dropped off a little since last year. Recently had the worst start of his major league career. I think he gave up 10 earned and 2 1/3. But I think these guys are where they should be. Sale also, despite that one. Here's another stat for you. Chris Sale, when he pitched that one hitter the other day, in the history of baseball since 1900, Rick, here are the lefties who have 15 or more strikeouts in a game, giving up one hit or less. It's Warren Spahn in 1960, Randy Johnson 4 times, John Lester and Kershaw last year, and Chris Sale like a week ago or whenever that actually happened. Very small select list. But I do agree. I like the fact that you didn't take these guys on their names and move them into the top tier. The only other thing I'd say is I would move Stanton, and this is really picky. I would move Stanton. I know he's done for the year. He's hurt. But I would move Stanton into the first tier and move Rizzo back to the second, because Stanton this year, despite only playing 74 games, his numbers are 27 homers, 67 RBIs. As you know, when he was hurt, he was leading the major leagues in home runs. Now Rizzo, having a great year, don't get me wrong, in 115 games has 23 homers and 68 RBIs. Since we're counting last year, Stanton, again, despite getting hit in the face with that pitch towards the end of the year, 37, led the majors in homers, led the National League, 105 RBIs, 555 slugging, led the league. This year his slugging percentage was 606, even higher. So I would probably flip them, although I guess if you were drafting today, you wouldn't take Stanton if he had to play tomorrow because he's injured. That's a little picky, but I think Stanton is still a top-tier player.
Very interesting. And, yes, to a certain extent, that kind of mirrors what we did with the NFL list, where Tom Brady made the list, but in a second-tier capacity because you'd be losing four games with him. And so to a certain extent, yes, Stanton is kind of factored in with the injury, but those are excellent points. And Corey Kluber, if there's anybody that really points out the moving target nature of doing this baseball list in season, again, I had him 20 last year doing this list in August, and I worried that I might come off as being a homer. Had
right.
he done the list at the end of the season, I think
right.
he probably might have been 10 to 12. So
absolutely.
When you look at the drop-off of three spots on paper, it's really more than that. Kluber would have been higher had we done the list a month later. So it's really greater than a drop-off of three spots while still making the list. It just kind of shows you everything that goes into it.
And, Rick, if I could, before we go to the top tier, I just want to give you a couple guys who I thought should be considered for the second tier. The most interesting, who is, I see on your notes, the top four players from 2012 were all back in 2013 and have not been back since. Josh
yep.
Hamilton, Matt Kemp, Justin Verlander, and Joey Votto. I'll just make a quick pitch for Joey Votto to be in the second tier because I was looking at his numbers, and right now, as we're taping this, he's third in the league in OBP at 437. He's fifth in slugging at 538. He's third in OPS at 975. He leads the major leagues in walks with 90. He's tied for 10th with homers and 21, and he's got that eighth highest batting average at 310. So I think Votto is a guy who at least could have been considered down there with Altuve and Abreu. Again, maybe a little picky, but I thought Votto at least deserved maybe a chance to be on the second tier. The other two guys I'll mention very quickly, New York bias, Mark Teixeira having an incredible comeback year, 31 homers, fourth in the American League, 79 RBIs, fifth, 58 walks, fifth, fourth in slugging, fifth in OPS, 360 OBP, and as you know, an unbelievable defensive first baseman. And finally, here's a weird one. I'll be interested to see what you think, but he's got such a partial record, been only in the league for parts of 3 years, but Jose Fernandez of the Marlins, his career records now, he's hurt again on the DL after missing, you know, Tommy John, 20-8 with a 2.26 ERA. Those are his career marks. His WHIP for his career is 0.98, and he's 15-0 at home as a pitcher
yeah.
for the Miami Marlins. So it might not be a big enough sample, I understand that, but certainly a guy I thought should at least be mentioned.
Yes, absolutely, and the Joey Votto thing makes me smile. Second time I've heard that today, as I ran the list past FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy, so you know you're in excellent territory on that one there, in excellent company with Nate agreeing with you on that and him having chastised me in his trademark style that Joey Votto should be on the list. So, yeah, second time I've heard that today. Very, very interesting. As we get to the list here, let's go 18 to 11, and then we can tackle the top 10 after that. A lot of guys, a lot of gate crashers here in this next bunch here, going up from 18 to 11. Only one guy made the list last year, and I'll mention that when we get to him. Number 18 is Anthony Rizzo. Number 17, Dallas Keuchel. Number 16, Sonny Gray. 15, Chris Archer. 14, Jake Arrieta. 13, Nelson Cruz. Number 12, Johnny Cueto, The only guy out of this bunch who was on the list last year, number six a year ago, and again, and this is a common theme, it's not so much that he's fallen off, it's that a lot of other guys, I think, have wedged their way in front of him by the overall star power in baseball maybe being a little bit greater at the high end than it was a year ago. The last guy before we get to the top ten is Manny Machado, who was also not on the list last year. So out of all of those guys, 18 to 11, Cueto, number 12 when he was number 6 a year ago, the only guy back on the list from last year, Machado, Cruz, Arrieta, Archer, Gray, Cutchell, and Rizzo, with the exception of Cruz, all very young talents. Cruz is a guy also, too, who was borderline for making the list last year, arguably could have. The rest of these guys have all just really kind of grabbed the bull by the horns this year, Steve, and really just kind of taken major steps forward.
Well, I totally agree. And again, I give you credit. These are the pitchers I was talking about over the big names you put in the second tier. A guy like a Keuchel who came out of nowhere. Chris Archer has been good but not great. Arrieta reviving his career. Sonny Gray, excellent out in Oakland. So I really like this list. I would say, I think we spoke about it last year, Nelson Cruz had that unbelievable year for Baltimore on the one-year deal. I got to say, I certainly thought, and most people thought, well, he's leaving Camden Yards. What's he going to do in Seattle? And, of course, he's really done great in Seattle as well. So I'm in complete agreement on this part of the list. Manny Machado was hurt last year, but a tremendous young talent. So I really like this group of guys, my Picayune, Stanton, Rizzo aside. But this group of pitchers, Cueto, Arrieta, Archer, Gray, Keuchel, right now, I think as a fivesome, much as I love that other fivesome we talked about in the second tier, I think these five this year have pitched better than the five stars, if you will, the King and Bumgarner and Kluber, et cetera. This particular year, they have pitched better and deserve to be in that first tier.
Absolutely. And with the exception of Gray, who was stuck on a very bad team, and of Cueto, who wasn't able to do much in Cincinnati, although he's certainly moving the needle in Kansas City, these other guys have also elevated their ball clubs. When you look at what Keuchel has done, Archer, Arrieta, they have all been very instrumental in their teams rising up. Now, there's a lot of great pitchers in that group there. Less in the way of pitchers as we get into the top 10, and particularly more towards the top of the top 10. That being, I think, just largely because there are so many great young pitchers in baseball right now. I think, again, pure power hitting, particularly when it's accompanied by a high average, is still a rarer skill set in the game than being a top-flight power arm. So that kind of guides a little bit of where this is going.
Is that something you would agree with in general?
I
agree 100%, and I think it's twofold now. I think because of the finally recognition by everybody of the shift, and this goes back to Joe Maddon in Tampa Bay. I remember watching the Yankees on opening day where David Cone and one other Yankee announcer were having this long discussion about, oh, the shift and what's going on here. And I remember writing an article that the revolution has been televised. Joe Maddon's already been doing this for 2 years. Now, as you know, every team every day plays a shift on many, many, many hitters. I think that's taken away from the averages. You know, I heard Big Poppy say he loses 30 hits a year or 40 hits a year from the shift. I don't know if that's true, but I do know it's in these guys' head. Every year you hear Teixeira, oh, I'm going to learn to bunt. I'm going to hit the other way. He never does. I think in the future we're going to see a new breed of players who are more spray hitters, more willing to drop a bunt down, more willing to go the other way. But I think you're right because of the intelligence behind the shift. Now, we go back many years, and Lou Boudreau invented the Ted Williams shift, et cetera, but it was for one or two guys. Now, you watch some of these games, and they shift. If there's nine guys in the lineup in the American League, they'll shift on six or seven of them, more for lefties than righties, I understand. But I think that's really changed the game, where going forward, it's going to be much harder, and I'm guessing that's why you have more hitters, frankly, at the top of your list, because you do have the young pitchers, but they are being helped tremendously. They're tremendous talents, but they are being helped tremendously with the new defense in baseball. And frankly, in my mind, that's been going on for 4 or 5 years now. It's just really become prevalent in 2014 and 15.
Absolutely. And again, the hitters who, by and large, are pretty indomitable and who aren't really susceptible to much that you can do to kind of defense them, to me, again, that's still somewhat of a rarer skill set, and that kind of dictates what you see as the top 10 shapes its way out here. Let's go from 10 to 6 and take a look at this number 10, Jacob DeGrom. The nation really got a good look at him in the All-Star game with his outing. He has really continued that hot streak since, but it has been an unbelievable follow-up year to his Rookie of the Year campaign from 2014. He was not on the list a year ago. Number 9, Zach Greinke, who was 19th a year ago. He, too, has taken a huge, huge step forward this year, and you could make a very good case for him being the best pitcher in baseball in 2015. If not him, it might be the guy in front of him, Max Scherzer, who was not on the list a year ago, and I remember this was a point of contention. You made the point to me, Steve, that he probably should have been on, and I think clearly in retrospect that is the case. He's done a great job in Washington, and them falling apart is not at all on him. Number 7, Josh Donaldson, a guy who has really emerged from nowhere over the last couple of years, but this season in Toronto has been his very best. He was not on the list a year ago. He rockets to number 7. Number 6, Andrew McCutchen, who was 11th a year ago. He got off to a very, very rough start to the season, but again, a lot of progression to the mean since then. And if you were to take that into account, if we were starting a 162-game season right now, him having gotten that out of the way previously might only make him look better. So you see at this point here, especially at the top part of this this group of five guys, we start to get into the hitters that will predominate the top five on the list overall. But prior to that, DeGrom, Greinke, Scherzer, who have all been big pictures of dominance in the National League thus far this year, Steve.
Yeah, I think I could make a case for DeGrom and Greinke to be even higher, but I don't disagree with the notion that it's mainly at the top going to be these hitters because it's harder to find these guys now. And I will also say, and we've talked about this generally over the years, you know, when you went from the four-man rotation starting in the late 60s with the Mets of Seaver and Kuzman and Gentry, Ryan was a part-time pitcher there, and through the 70s where we started to go from the four-man rotation to the five-man rotation, where by the 80s virtually everybody was in the five-man rotation, I thought the value of a pitcher, of a star pitcher, really did go down a little just by simple mathematics. In the four-man rotation, as you know, you're going to get 40 to 41 starts a year. In the five-man rotation, by simple mathematics, these guys, top guys today, only get 33, 34. That's a big difference to me, Rick, 7 or 8 games a year. Throw in now the, you know, middle relievers, the eighth inning guy, the ninth inning guy. You know, the Yankees have a seventh inning guy and an eighth inning guy and a ninth inning guy. So I do think the value of the starting pitcher as just the sole starting pitcher has gone down a little. Having said that, you need 5 of them, I think 6 in some cases. You should have some 6-man rotation coming down the road. The Yankees have experimented with it a little bit. The Mets have experimented with it a little bit, just talking about New York now. But particularly these two guys, DeGrom, for his career now 20-12, interestingly the same record as Matt Harvey, 2.35 career ERA, very similar to Matt Harvey. This year, second to Greinke in ERA with a 2.03 ERA, and Greinke all by himself now in the major leagues at 1.58. So I like the 5 selections a lot. I would say maybe those two guys would be a little higher. Scherzer on the this year and last year and the year before, Scherzer has become a real star pitcher. I will say he's fallen off a little, 5.25 ERA in August for the Nationals, who have crumbled like a team. Every time I see Matt Williams on TV, you know, he looks like he almost doesn't want to be there anymore, and I don't know if he will be there if the Nationals don't make the playoffs. I'm a little biased. I picked them to go all the way, Rick. But yeah. Scherzer, of course, still a superstar pitcher. I might move Greinke and DeGrom a little up on the roof on the list. Donaldson, to me, this year having an MVP season, you can make a case. I was watching the Yankees and the Blue Jays play a number of times. When you trot out Tulowitzki, Donaldson, and Bautista as your top three, and now Encarnacion off the DL, although he hasn't had a great year, those first three guys, you got to be petrified if you're a major league pitcher. Those are the first three guys you're going to face. I mean, it is scary. But of the three, I think Donaldson has been the most valuable, and you certainly can make a case for him for MVP. McCutchen seems to now be an MVP candidate every year, and he's really turned the Pirates, in my opinion, from losers to winners in the last 3 years.
Absolutely, no question about that. And just 2 notes on what you said there. Matt Williams, just on a personal note, I'm a Matt Williams guy dating back to the 97 Indians, so I would hate to see him lose his job, although to be objective, if they don't make the playoffs, it's hard to make a case to keep him. And also another Cleveland-oriented comment about that bunch there. One more reason for Cleveland people to hate Pittsburgh. Andrew McCutchen has become what Grady Sizemore was supposed to become. So one more reason for us to look with hatred towards the convergence of the three rivers there in Pennsylvania, the way that he has turned out. The top five guys on the list for 2015, number five, he has been number one on the list previously. He was number three in 2014. Miguel Cabrera, slight drop down, but again, more so because of the emergence of the guys in front of him. Number four, Bryce Harper, not on the list last year, so he is the highest guy to jump up the list from off the list in 2014. However, he was on the list in 2013. It was the problems that he was having last year that kind of caused the donut. He's been back and really living up to his potential as never before this year. Number three, Paul Goldschmidt. You talk about jumps. He was number 14 a year ago. So for a guy on the list jumping up, those 11 spots mark the biggest jump of anybody from last year to this year. Just an absolute state-of-the-art big-time power hitter with high average, not a hole in his game at all. Number two, Clayton Kershaw. Number one a year ago, you got Mike Trout at number one. He was two a year ago. We have a flip-flop between the two. I think it was a coin toss a year ago, and you could almost kind of say the same thing this year. Kershaw hasn't been the best pitcher for much of the year in the National League, but when you take the full body of work into account, you got to slot him very high, I think highest among the pitchers. He went through a pretty rough stretch by his standards earlier in the season, but again, if nothing else, that kind of makes him a little bit more dangerous if you were starting a season now that he'd gotten a stretch like that out of the way behind him. But a lot of guys of very high pedigree, Trout, Kershaw, Cabrera, regulars on this top tier here, Goldschmidt and Harper joining that group in the top five at number three and four, respectively. The cream of the crop, the very, very, very best in MLB, Steve.
Yeah, well, Cabrera's been hurt on the DL 6 weeks, just got back, but certainly, you know, he's leading the league in hitting and OBP and, you know, OPS. I think he will eventually get enough at-bats, but he did just get back. Part of the big reason Detroit isn't Detroit this year, along with Verlander, who I think we talk about, or was Robinson Cano maybe done? I think Verlander is kind of done. He's pitched a couple of good games this year, but you know, all that's the keys to the Tigers' demise, for lack of a better word. But Cabrera is still one of the superstars. You know, I just saw a few at-bats the other day that he took, and to me he still looked like Cabrera. I mean, just an amazing offensive player. Deserves to be where he is. Harper, I said all year he's the MVP in the NL, but I also believe that the MVP, this is not MOP, not most outstanding player. We've had this conversation, Rick. If the Nationals don't make the playoffs, and I can't see Harper or Goldschmidt, frankly, being the MVP, I don't know who will be. You know, it could be like a McCutchen in the National League. But Goldschmidt and Harper having MVP-type leads, I never thought the Nationals would not make the playoffs. Now, as you know, they're in danger of not making the playoffs. But certainly Harper has been what everyone thought he would be his first 3 years. He was, in my mind, totally overshadowed by Trout. You know, they came into the league together. Harper is the one who was on Sports Illustrated when he was, what, 18 years old in junior college,
yep,
or whatever he was doing. Trout kind of, not a total unknown, but Trout from day one. And I'll give you my theory on Trout, because I agree he is number one. If you watch Trout whenever he hits a home run, just watch the replays of his home runs. I think Trout as a right-hander really hits like a left-hander. You know when you're pitching to lefties that they like it down. For some reason, lefties
right.
like the ball down. But Trout is a righty, and when they throw the ball down to him, I would say the majority of his home runs are on fastballs down in the zone. Take a look now when you watch the replay. So I think part of his greatness, and he's great in everything, five-tool player, et cetera, but I think part of it is, generally speaking, when you pitch to righties, you keep the ball down and you kind of know you're safe. In fact, I think in the playoffs last year, the reason he didn't do well is because they pitched him up for the first time ever, although he seems a little better on pitches up in the zone this year. But his strength is like a lefty, and because he's righty, I think that really helps him tremendously offensively. But Harper, MVP candidate, if they make the playoffs, I think he is the MVP. Goldschmidt, MVP candidate, but Arizona will not make the playoffs. Kershaw, my only complaint, you know, he had a slow start last year also, people forget, And he had a slow start this year, but now he's where you expect him to be, high in strikeouts, high in ERAs. You know, Kershaw, Greinke, you don't want to face the Dodgers. Or I should say Greinke,
right.
Kershaw maybe this year. You don't want to face the Dodgers with that duo. And Mike Trout, I still think, is overall, especially if you're taking into account last year and maybe a little less the year before, he's the best baseball player there is. And
totally agree.
I'm a New York guy, Rick, and the analogies to Mickey Mantle, I don't dismiss them out of hand.
No, I agree with that, Steve. And just a note here, overall excellence in the 4 years we've been doing the top 30 list, six players have been on every year. That's Trout and Kershaw, McCutchen, Cabrera, Craig Kimbrell, and Johnny Cueto also. Congratulations to those six. They've been on every year. This year was 14 hitters, 14 starting pitchers, and three relief pitchers on the list. Last year, 15 hitters, 11 starting pitchers, four closers on the list. Steve Callis, thank you so much for being here today to break down the list. Thank you all, everybody, for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 589.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.